Hey, I'm Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we work to help end the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real-life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates as we debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, frauds, scams, and multi-level marketing. Join us all month for stories of true crime, true con, and urban legends from around the world. Happy Halloween, Huns. Hey, Hunbots and Hunbros. I hope you are enjoying the Halloween season over here on Life After MLM. Today, we are going to dive into some white-collar true crime and tell you a story about one of my favorite fraudsters of all time, Billy McFarland, and the dumpster fire that was his music festival in the Bahamas. And one of the coolest things about making content and putting out calls to action is that sometimes you guys respond and you say, I can help you tell that story. I was there. And that's exactly what happened. I was so excited when Gina reached out and I said, yes, we have to tell this story. She was under an NDA for a while. That NDA no longer exists. And she has a puzzle piece to this fire festival story that we've never heard before. And it is shocking. Like, you have no idea how excited I am about this episode. And I cannot wait for you to listen to it because it is juicy. I do want to let you know, though, because Gina has a small child and a dog, there's a little bit of children and dog. I did my absolute best to work around that. Kayla did her absolute best to work around that. I think we got most of it out, but I think we all also know that, like, life is what happens when you're making plans, doing other things. Just a little heads up about those little audio issues. We do our best around here. Everybody has different recording equipment on their side. So at the end of the day, the story is the most important thing, and I think that you'll really enjoy this story. I want to say thank you to all of our new Patreon members and remind you that we've got some fun extras coming up. Thank you to Jessica Hine, Adriana Robles, Lori Jones, Amy Smith, Kara Porter, Jody Taylor, Andrea Lynn, we got a mama of three, Jennifer Maring, Amber Wade, and Brycey. Welcome. Enjoy the content. Catch up on all the stuff you've missed so far and be prepared for the extras even in this episode. If you're a fan of the podcast and you enjoy the show and you want just a little bit extra, like some of my bad jokes that I cut out for the public, all that kind of stuff, you can find it on the Patreon. Our tiers start at $5 right now. Everything's getting a reboot and a rebrand and a rename, just like an MLM, soon, but not yet. But go ahead and join if you'd like, or wait until we change it up. It's up to you, and I really appreciate every single dollar. It helps us produce this show and make sure that we've got new episodes coming up. And you know what? We really need it this time of year because we're producing so much more than usual. I really appreciate it. You guys are amazing. This ghost story is a submission. It was sent to me by Michelle Carpenter's husband, Tyler. And it is a true story of something that happened to him about 20 years ago or so. And I've been to their house. And so when I was reading this, I was picturing myself standing on the corner and going like, oh my gosh, this is so creepy. So I read it in kind of a hushed tone. I don't know. It's like my ASMR voice or something. I'm not sure. Abby said it was cringy. I apologize if it is. I was trying to be. That's a good word.
You weren't cringy. The little Halloween song was.
She doesn't like our new Halloween music. It's okay. It's changing in November. We have, like, all kinds of stuff planned.
Ooh, that's scary. I'm scared you're going to keep it.
Anyway, this is a true story. It's by Tyler. I read it like a creepy little bedtime story. So enjoy! And then enjoy Gina's story because it's so juicy. It is so... I'm going to listen to it again right now. See you on Wednesday for my Billy McFarland deep dive. I was home for the summer from college. It was around 2:30 in the morning when I was arriving at my house. I'd been out at a friend's house, catching up and playing video games. No drinking or drugging occurred because that might explain what I saw. So I live on a T intersection and there is no parking on my street. I didn't want to block my mom in because I was a lazy college student and I wanted to sleep in until noon. So I parked on the intersecting street, as I had done so many times before. It was dark, just as you would expect 2:30 in the morning to be. The hot, thick air had settled for a brief period. I parked my hand-me-down white Buick LeSabre in front of nosy Linda's house. I shut the door as quietly as I could to not disturb the silence of my neighborhood. Being a quiet neighbor is one of the most considerate things you can be. I put my keys in my pocket as I exited the car, even though I would need them to unlock the door 30 feet away from my present location. Again, I had not had a drop to drink or a bowl to smoke when I saw what I saw. Only cigarettes and water for the evening. I strolled to my front door, anticipating a long sleep and taquitos for my breakfast, but what you'd call lunch. That is when I spied it out of the corner of my right eye. A black, shadowy mass standing on the corner. I took a few more steps as a cold shudder filled my body cavity. And then I chuckled to myself. What the hell are you afraid of? Nothing's there. Just turn around, I said in my head. With a smirk on my face, I turned around and saw it as clear as a freshly cleaned window pane. The figure standing, or hovering, if you like, was about 6 feet tall. There were no legs or arms, but more of a suggestion that it had once had appendages. Its color was dark black, as if I were staring into the endless swirling pool of a black hole. The only other color this being emitted was a gray face. It looked more like the static of an old tube television on the wrong channel. It didn't so much see me as it knew me. It could see everything I had done and everything I would do. Then I regained what little faculty I had left and sprinted the final few feet to my door. The key shook in my hand as I struggled to open both door locks. As soon as I got inside, I looked out the peephole, hoping to glimpse the being again, but I could see nothing. I ran to my basement lair and covered my head in my old stinky comforter and shivered myself to sleep. The next morning, I saw nothing and told no one until I tell you today, my friends. A couple years later, I inherited my childhood home after my mom passed away. It's been over a decade, and I still have not seen the black shadow standing on the corner. I still look for it most nights.
Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. To say that I'm excited about having this conversation today, I think is kind of silly because I've been making content for a while. I haven't made an episode to talk to one of his victims. And when this opportunity came around, I said, oh, yes, when can you talk to me? And I mean, within days, we're here, we are having this conversation. So I would like to welcome to the show Gina, and we're going to be talking about Fyre Festival. Hi, Gina. How are you?
Hi, Roberta. Thank you so much for having me. This is a long time coming for people, the real people that actually worked there and went there to actually have their side of the story being told. So it's thank you again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I was telling you before we hit record that Billy is one of my favorite scammers. He's one of my fascinations. And I've sort of been following his antics since he got early release out of prison. And recently, I sort of talked about it on the podcast randomly here or there as I would hear these little things. But recently he announced that Fyre Fest 2 is a go and people are buying tickets and he's selling merch and this whole thing is happening. And you reached out to me and basically said like, yeah, let's get restitution for the real victims. Like he still owes me money. I was hired to work and I was like, okay. And you have a very interesting story and we will get all into that. But I think where we should start is what you do for a living and then how you met Billy McFarland.
Yes. So I actually am in event staffing and management. And the company that was hired by Fyre Festival is no longer around due to the pandemic, but my day job is like recruitment, staffing, management, specifically for short-term events, activations, experiential pop-ups. And we were hired to staff the entire concierge and guest services element of Fyre Festival. And we had about less than 6 weeks notice.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It was red flags from the jump. And, you know, I did not own that staffing agency at the time, but I was a senior member of the team. From the beginning, it was, yeah, sure, we'll get you those signed contracts. Yeah, sure, we'll get you that retainer payment. And it just never happened. I mean, we were on the ground in the Bahamas trying to get that money, and it just never happened.
Let's start with where you first heard about Billy McFarland.
Yeah, so my background is in hospitality, specifically nightclubs. So I was a nightlife manager in New York for a long time. There was this one nightclub I worked at in Soho. It was maybe 2014. I was working as a VIP host at the time before I moved into management. And there were these guys that kept on trying to cut the line. And it was this one night in particular. We had, I don't know, maybe like five separate groups. And they're like, hey, I have a Magnesis Black card. That means I get to cut the line and have a bottle. And I'm like, wait, what now? I was like, what are you talking about? I'm like an American Express Black card? And they're like, no, Magnesis. And they like whip it out like it's a real Black card. What the hell is this? And so I called the manager and they're like, I don't know what he's talking about. And they're like, I have a reservation. I'm going to call the guy who sold me this. And I'm like, I don't understand what this is. And they're like, well, it's this membership. And then we get stuff for the membership. So after that happened, five guys came in. We had to turn them all away. We're like, you know, you can buy a table or you can sit at the bar or something. Like, you're welcome to come in, but you're not getting to the front of the line and getting a free bottle. Like, we don't know who you are and what this is. So I started looking into it. I started asking questions. I asked my friends at other nightclubs. I started asking managers. I'm like, have you heard of this? And they're like, yeah, like these people just try to keep coming in with like these weird Black cards and they said it's a club. And I was like, okay. So me being, you know, cute 20 something and all my girlfriends too, I started asking questions about this club and we went to a party. We actually went to a party. And it was the most bizarre experience I've ever had in my life. And it was this tiny little, it was that penthouse that they talk about.
Magnesis house. Yeah.
So we went there and it was like this, you know, little bar and it looked like nice, but it wasn't anything, you know, super special. And it was like 35 old dudes and like a bunch of young women that were dressed for some sort of masquerade party. I'm not sure. I didn't get the theme note. It was very much like a creepy, predatory thing. And apparently finding out, they were like, hey, we got these girls for you. This is part of the club type of situation. So like kept selling things that weren't for sale.
Right.
And that's the beginning of, you know, entering into this like nightlife and cool experiential stuff and offering all these things. But the promises were never kept to these people who are part of this membership or who had paid to have all these things. There's no deliverables and it's a running theme.
Yeah, how strange.
It's so weird.
Was Billy at that party?
Yeah.
Did you meet him that night?
Yeah, I had known about him. He had gone to like nightclubs and stuff and I used to work in a lot of places and knew a lot of people out. I'd seen him around. So it's not like he was a new face. He would come into, you know, some of the establishments I worked in. Like he was trying to make a name for himself around that time, especially with that card. And that's where you meet people, right?
Right.
But it really looked like he was targeting people that were new in town or like students with money. And that's who was really going to these things, you know, and it's a shame. And it's really sad to hear that too, because taking these people that are super vulnerable and that are looking for, you know, to socialize and to have a good time. And it's the same thing with Fyre Festival. People are like, this is going to be so cool. And it's this big, huge social element. And this, you know, hey, I was there and like part of the club and cool. And you're preying on that. And you're hoping that this is going to draw everybody in, that it's good enough. But it's just all talk. It's all smoke and mirrors.
You hear in the media a lot, like before, right? In the beginning, before all of the messes, that Billy is really charming and kind of just a really fun guy. Did you experience that?
Not necessarily toward me, but to people around, right? So it's, I'm the life of the party. I'm everyone's best friend. And that's how he acted. I'm everyone's best friend every single time. The coolest guy in the room. And he's tall, right? Like he has a presence. So you notice him right away. And especially he's always has a big smile on his face and, you know, always going around like, hey, my friend over here, my friend over there. Like, you know, everyone's his friend. And anytime he walks in the room. So of course it's going to make you feel good. Of course it's going to make you want to trust him, except for the people that actually know what's going on.
Right. Between Magnesis and Fire, Billy does a couple things. He starts this app, which is the whole reason why the festival was even in existence at all. At what point between the announcement of the festival and like the festival happening, like at what point were you like, hey, I know this guy, he's kind of a scammer, like he's kind of smarmy, like we should be careful?
So first of all, it wasn't him directly who reached out to us. It was Fire Festival LLC and it was Andy King.
Okay.
Andy King, you know, he's been in events for a long time and he's like, you know, and he's another one that needs to be watched. He's just as bad as Billy.
Yeah.
He reached out to us, you know, Fire Festival LLC, whatever. And they're like, hey, we have this, the greatest event that's ever going to happen. And of course, us being an event staffing agency at the time, they were like, yes, cool. Let's do this. And they're like, by the way, it's in 6 weeks. And so we're like, okay, it's challenging, but we can make it work, right? Like we're, you know, very quick. This is what we specialize in. We're all like, we were top event staffing agency in the country. Sure, we can make this happen. We have resources. Start putting together a proposal. They're like, hey, this is what we think we need. This is how many people are going to be there. This is how big the property is going to be. And then we send them a quote, you know, like an SOW. And for what it was, they're like, hey, Gina, what do you think? How many people do you think we need? How much do you think we should be charging for this? And I quoted them approximately. So this was supposed to be for 2 weeks, but we'd have to stay down there for the entire 2 weeks. Plus we'd have to implement training. Plus we'd have to get everybody on flights, room and board, you know, everything that they need, meals per diem per day. And it was supposed to be 24-hour concierge service.
Wow.
Right? 24 hours a day. 7 days a week during those periods or those long weekends or whatever. But we had to be there the full 2 weeks and we had to be there a week before to set up. So it's a big project, right? I quoted them for about 200 total staff. And that was like for to help with production of the guest experience. That was to assist with, you know, the 24-hour service. You know, we can't have people working more than 7 hours a day. All these things, right? Breaks, having people be floaters. The sheer size of the property plus the multiple locations. So like, yes, they had to be like where everyone was staying, right? But then we were supposed to have concierge staff that were dedicated to the villas. Then we were supposed to have them dedicated to all the points of transportation. Then we were supposed to have them dedicated to like the all the experiences. So like the go see the pigs and like jet skis and like all the things, right? So it was about 200 staff. I was like, this will be like the bare minimum of human being for 24-hour service, right? And they're like, oh, okay, great. Thanks for sharing this. So our budget is a little bit less than that.
Yeah, so you're having to staff for these 3 weeks. Firefest originally was supposed to be two different weekends, very Coachella-esque.
Yeah.
So you've got the week before, the week during Firefest week one, and then the third week for week two. You say 200 people, mm-hmm. but we've got the 24-hour, we have the villas and the yachts and the this and the that and the food and the, you need people for all of that.
Yep.
And they tell you, our budget is a little lower than that. Like how much lower was that discrepancy of the budget?
The number of staff went from quoting about 200 for 24-hour service to about 40. Yeah, yeah, because what they told us was there needs to be a specific number of volunteers, local volunteers, not even paid people, volunteers. And this is not my first time working with volunteers, right? They don't show up or they're not going to do the job that you're expecting them to do. And you want local volunteers to act as concierge to a bunch of entitled people who bought a $10,000 ticket.
Yeah, right.
Good luck with that.
Wow. That's really what they told you?
Yeah.
Well, fill in the 160 cracks. with local volunteers.
And then it went like, oh, well, the experiences, well, there'll be local people to help the people with that. That's when I was like, this won't be safe.
Mm-mm.
And it was red flags all over the place. And I told the owners and I was like, hey, I don't think we should do this.
Head over to quince.com and grab yourself a little something something and support the show by supporting our sponsors. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and say hello to lightweight fabrics and classic styles. I have been taking advantage of the beautiful weather and getting outside for daily walks, and I cannot say enough good things about the Flowknit high-rise boyfriend jogger from Quince. Seriously, running errands, doing school pickups, swinging by the farmer's market, or taking Zsa Zsa for a stroll around the lake, these bad boys are versatile. I love the deep pockets, the high waistband, and the internal hidden drawstring. They're quick drying, moisture wicking, antimicrobial, and the four-way stretch makes them so comfortable. They're made with 88% recycled polyester, and the Global Style Standard certified yarn dramatically lowers environmental impact by diverting landfill and ocean-bound plastic. Not to mention using recycled claim standard approved dyeing, washing, and manufacturing processes with low water and eco-friendly dyes. They have become an absolute favorite, and you can save up to 59% off the high-end counterpart by shopping with Quince. Throw on a Cotton Modal scoop neck tee and some sneakers, and you've got a perfect, effortless outfit. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/MLM for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/MLM to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/MLM. Do you ever wonder how much of your personal data is out there on the internet just for anyone to find? I promise it's more than you think. Your name, contact info, social security number, home address, even information about your family members. It's all being compiled by data brokers and openly sold online. This can lead to a lot of problems, including identity theft, phishing attempts, harassment, and unwanted spam calls. But now you can protect your privacy with Delete Me. Signing up for the service is super easy. Just provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. They send you regular, personalized privacy reports showing what info they found, where they found it, and what they removed. I got my report, and I was floored with the results. Of the 105 data brokers they checked, 83 of them had my data. Delete Me then removed 173 listings of my personal data off the internet. And they make sure that it stays off too. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me at a special discount just for our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and use promo code MLM at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/MLM and enter code MLM at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/MLM, code MLM.
And, you know, this is going to be really difficult. I was like, this is going to put a strain on everybody. I was like, what? And then everybody has to work in 12-hour shifts to cover a 24-hour shift. And then you only have 20 people working per day. And that means there's no time for rest or relief. That means that there's people aren't going to be able to have breaks, you know, in this massive property. And I'm just like, what is going on here? And so I was like, we shouldn't do this. And then, you know, but Andy and Billy were like, oh yeah, it's going to be great. Like everything's going to be wonderful. And, you know, you can do this and really like hyping it up. And they're like, this is going to be best. And you're going to get the most exposure. You guys are going to be millionaires after this. And the owners just like went for it. They're like, yeah, okay. Everything sounds great. And I'm like, I don't know about this.
Was there any kind of like deposit or any kind of money that exchanged hands between Billy, Andy, Fire, and the event company?
No. So we expected typically we'd do like a 20% retainer or deposit, and we would do it in payment terms, right? So I think for this one, we ended up splitting it up into like four different payment terms. So it was need this now to start staffing, then as soon as we get there, we need the other piece. And then after week one, we'll get the rest. And then at the end, we'll reconcile, you know, the difference or whatever it is. Sometimes people are sick and, you know, they didn't work the hours and the whatevers, right? Or you might need more people, et cetera. And they kept on asking us too. They're like, hey, you know, we really want to book the 40 people, but in the event that like everything's going really well, how much will it take to like get more people on week two? And I was like, that's another red flag. I'm like, how about we just staff this adequately so like we are good to go for like 2 weeks, right? Because then I have to like train everybody again. We have to find housing for more people. I'm like, this doesn't sound right.
But even like the caveat of if everything goes well for week two makes me think they're thinking week one's not going to go so well.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was just like all those little like, it is just like those little nuggets here and there where I'm just like, am I the only one who thinks this is a bad idea? And it went like that. And because I worked for the company and I was in charge of, you know, all the staff, we had to just go along with it. What am I going to do? Quit my job, my actual job that I have? It was all the warning signs. And I was like, hey, you know, maybe we should just pull out. And it wasn't my decision.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we went through it. I brought people from California, you know, some people from Miami, which was good, from New York, mostly because we were based in New York, people from Seattle, Washington, like from Australia, the best of the best people that we had across the country and world to do this with us.
Oh my God. Wow.
Like, I'm not kidding.
So everything's kind of weird. Are you following along in the news as it's going up? I mean, there's people on Twitter who are like, this is a scam. This is what's happening. Are you following along with any of that?
Yeah. You know, at this point, we're pretty locked in. They're promising all the things like, yes, you're getting payment. Andy kept on telling us that a wire was coming through for weeks. So they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get the wire yet. I mean, this is where the whole wire fraud thing comes in, right?
Mm-hmm.
For weeks and weeks. It was, oh yeah, it's coming in. I can't believe it didn't hit your bank yet. Like we have emails about that. Text messages, phone calls, like, oh, it didn't hit your bank yet? That's so weird. There's so much money in there.
Wow.
So we're like, okay, sure. Yeah, no problem. Right. Yeah. With the money, I think that, you know, the owners were just hoping that it was going to come in and it just never did. So anyways, we were following along. And so part of that was because we are now the concierge team. We took over communication from concierge@firefestival.com or, you know, the email.
Oh my God.
So it was our staffing agency that was then responsible. I think we became responsible 2 weeks prior to the event. And so we were dealing with all the inquiries, anybody who wanted to cancel, the RFIDs, and we didn't have any of that information. They didn't give us anything. There was no place to actually put the money on the RFIDs. So that money was just going into nowhere. So that wasn't actually like a thing. It was just like, here's a bracelet.
The wristband scam.
No technology.
Wow.
And then the emails, I mean, they got crazier and crazier as the days went on. So with social media and everything that everyone's saying, they kept on reassuring all the vendors that were still on board and the performers, because there was a lot of performers there, a lot of performers there. And a lot of them went as freelance and they were promised, I mean, not from us, but, you know, coming from like Miami or other islands. And they said, hey, you come perform, you do all these things, you send us an invoice at the end.
Oh no.
Some of those performers couldn't even get off the island for months.
Oh my God.
Like yoga instructors and everything. Like they went down there thinking they were going to get a big payday. And people, I heard stories like someone was stuck there for 6 months, had to go to Nassau, like get some money to get there, was performing until they could get back home into the States.
Oh my God. So you take over, well, not you personally, but your company, the one that you work for, takes over concierge 2 weeks before the event. You said that you guys had to get down there a week early, which I know that probably didn't happen because of the documentaries. So at what point did you and your team actually go, and how many people did you take with you?
3 days before, and there was 40 people.
3 days before, when you needed seven. You show up 3 days before. Tell me about that.
So we get to Miami, right? And then we get on these chartered flights, and there was, you know, this, they couldn't find like itineraries. They couldn't find people's names. And we got on, everybody got on okay, because we were, we all got on the same flight because we went 3 days earlier, right? So like no one else was expected, you know, even in Miami at that time, if people weren't based out of Miami. So we were okay to get down there. And when we land, we saw the buses, you know, that picked us up, but it wasn't, there weren't any buses for us. I found out when we landed, there was no accommodation for the staff.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So the transportation and logistic manager, he was like, oh yeah, didn't they tell you? And we're like, no, because we were supposed to have villas that weren't rented out for our team. And we're like, yeah, okay, no problem. That was promised to us. That was like in the contract. We found out when we landed, they never actually got the keys to the villas. Well, no one ever gave it to them, and no one even agreed to it. They're like, you can't have my house. Like, no. And there just wasn't enough houses to go around.
Right. So like, that's another thing. They have the Great Exuma Family Regatta, which is this huge yearly sailing event.
Yep.
Everybody comes to the island to that exact point to watch this huge sailing race.
Yep.
All of the hotels are booked. It is peak season for visiting the Caribbean. The Sandals Resort that was on the same part of land, completely booked. Yep. Every resort around, completely booked. Every flight in, out, boat in, out, completely booked. Every taxi driver, every hotel, everything. They're busy with the regatta. They're totally busy.
We couldn't even rent cars.
There's no keys because they don't exist.
Yeah.
That was some of my favorite footage in the documentary of Billy looking for the keys that didn't exist.
They never had it. It just wasn't available, right? And so I was like, so where are you putting everyone?
Right. You have 40 people.
They're like, well, you can stay on the cruise ship that we were going to put the influencers until they get here. And I'm like, no, they can stay on the cruise ship the entire time. And so this is where it all started with me being like, this is no joke from like right now. And so we got everybody on the cruise ship. They all had to give their passports, of course, you know, whatever. They all got rooms. And I was like, do not get off the cruise ship with your passport. Do not. Just keep your passport. You are on there. You are a guest on that cruise ship. You're okay. I was like, just stay there. You'll be taken care of. You have 3 meals a day. They have plenty of stuff for you. You have beds and everything. I wasn't so lucky. So the management had, we were supposed to have a house on the island that didn't have houses.
Right.
Because we were supposed to be on-site management for the entire time. So we ended up staying at, this is going to get even funnier and weirder. So we hired Andy and Billy, an executive assistant that was there 2 to 3 weeks prior. And, you know, she was kind of reporting back and I was like, how's everything going? And she's like, this is a mess. They're all a mess, you know, whatever. But she had been down there for a while. And so I got all the staff on the cruise ship and then I was like, so where are we going? You know, where's the place that we're supposed to be staying? Like the manager, you know, management house. And she's like, well, you can stay in me and Andy's villa. You know, you can stay here until Blink-182 gets here. So it was Blink-182's house. So like all of the drinks and like all their rider was like in the house. And we were like, it had like these big paper signs that were like written on. Says Blink-182's don't touch.
Oh my gosh.
You know, soft drinks and like Powerades or whatever they wanted, right? And it was like on these like pallets in the house. Oh my God. And so I was like, okay, I guess. And so because the executive assistant was my friend, you know, we shared a room and the other manager and whatever, they went somewhere in the house and Andy was in the house, you know, or that was like his house too. So and Billy, I don't know where he stayed. He probably, who knows? Like they probably secured one house for like their, oh no, they stayed on the house on the island that like the production house. That's where they stayed. That's right.
Yeah. They had a big house.
Yeah, it was okay. Like it was like a, it was like the only place that actually had like a toilet and like running water and they wouldn't let anybody in. They like barricaded the door.
Wow.
Like, yeah. When like all that stuff happened. But anyways, we get to this house and we're like, okay. And I told everybody and they're like, hey, can we get off and do stuff? And I was like, absolutely not. I was like reporting to work the next day to get to the cruise ship, by the way, it was like this tiny little dinghy and they can only take like 4 or 5 people at a time.
So they got to take 10 trips every morning.
Yep. And so, so they went, you know, of course there was like a captain of the dinghy and they went, you know, and went back and forth to get all these people. But I was like, hey, everyone needs to be here by like 8 a.m. or something. Just get here when you can. I know it's going to be a bunch of back and forth trips. Just stay here and wait for me. I should be here first, but you know, in case I'm not, because the roads are really bad. The roads are barely paved. And we had one rented truck and it was this tiny little truck that only had like front seats. So we're all like smushed into this truck with like these tiny wheels and like this tiny little bed. And we had to share the truck between like 10 people like that need to get places in the house because there's no rented trucks. It was insane.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was like the first day. And so then the next morning, it was a tropical storm. So it was like hurricaning out and in the morning and we get there and everything is just destroyed. It wasn't even finished to begin with. it was never set up. It might have been set up like maybe a day or two before we got there, like maybe. And it was just the tents that were set up. So they're like, well, we can't even set up the concierge stuff until we have the tents set up. So our team of concierge, guest experience, actually had to help the local workers get the beds dry. Like there's like some people like holding like a fan and like trying to dry.
Oh my God.
In like 100 degree heat. Cause it just was a hurricane. It was like really humid and like the heat, some people had to go back to the cruise ship because it was so hot and like they were gonna get heat stroke. No provisions for us, barely any water. We weren't allowed to go like in the house, all of us, only the management. So anytime someone was like, hey, I can't do this anymore, I just sent them back to the cruise ship. I was like, this is bullshit. That was like a whole day of just doing that. And then the next day, everyone was supposed to arrive.
Yeah. The planes, like first plane landed just before 7 a.m. And they bust people over to the other side of the island where the little...
No, they did not.
No? Okay. You tell me what actually happened.
They bust them right to the tents at 7 o'clock in the morning. And we're like, no. And so that's where a lot of the original video was coming from. Probably some of our staff. Most of it was coming from the people who got bussed in that morning. And then they turned them around because they're like, oh, we don't have anything ready yet. And these people were like, yeah, no shit.
Wow.
And then that's when they brought them to the restaurant. And so all that food and alcohol, that poor woman that owns that restaurant, like she'll never recoup her funds. Like, right. I mean, everybody on that island, you know, they were hoping for like this payday. They were hoping, they're like, hey, this is going to pay for like our whole year. I mean, it's just a tragedy. But all the liquor, so we had to get all of our guest concierge people that we had, all like the big strong guys, took the cases of liquor that were meant for the bars at this other property, got taken all the way to the restaurant. And it's far. It was like on the other side, like on like another place in the island. Took the cases of tequila all the way to the restaurant. And then the restaurant didn't know these people were coming. This was not planned. And they just literally dumped busloads of people. And they told our team to just start handing people bottles of tequila to shut them up.
Oh my God.
I'm so shocked nobody got alcohol poisoning or like an ambulance or something like this. Because by the time they got back to where we were, people were just wrecked. And I'm just like, I'm literally watching like the world burn down.
Jeez.
Houses are on fire. You know, the images where you see the luggage and it's pitch black. There's no lights. So these people are running around and there's no bathrooms because they locked all the porta potties because there was nowhere to, I guess they didn't pay the porta potty people. So they locked all.
No. I just heard inadequate porta potties. I didn't hear locked because they weren't paid for.
So like, I think like they got like one open or something. Oh, something happened. So also this island, if you even want to call it that, is a big piece of concrete that was supposed to be the foundation of this dude's like mansion. It was a piece of concrete. It was never finished, of course. We all saw that. There was no fencing around it at all. And it was like a 15-foot drop.
Yeah, it's like a cliff.
It was so dangerous. And it was rocks, like shards of rocks. There was no water that came up. It was just rocks at the bottom. And probably some sharks, like, I don't know.
So everyone shows up that day and figures it out. It's pitch black. They're fighting over tents and soaking wet mattresses. They're fighting over trying to find their luggage. Their luggage is being thrown from like semi trucks. People complained about their things being stolen. People complained about being assaulted and attacked and harmed. We find out that the food, the 5-star Michelin food, is just cheese sandwiches. Was there any other food? I mean, all we hear about is the cheese sandwiches and the water that Andy, you know, secured. No food.
No food at all.
The only food that anybody ever saw really was that cheese sandwich.
Well, it was, so actually the cheese sandwich was like that night. That's all they could get over there. And then that woman who owned the restaurant, they asked her, they're like, how much food can you get here right now? And this poor woman and her team, like they came down there with like, you know, rice and whatever they could, beans, like salads, like whatever they could, like the next day to, you know, just have like some sustenance. And she did her absolute best with all the resources she had. But I can't imagine they even had like stockpiles for hundreds of people.
No.
Like that's not a thing. And then do you think a resort's going to offer any provisions? Absolutely not. They got their own problems. So there was no food.
Oh my God.
No, nothing. And barely any water. And like, I know you see in the documentary about like Andy and all the nonsense that made him famous. but they were like guarding that water too. It was embarrassing, beyond dangerous.
Absolutely. Well, another thing that was so dangerous is the RFID wristband tags that they claimed were going to, you know, this is how you ride your jet skis and do all your things.
Yeah.
They told everybody, don't bring cash, don't bring credit cards. It's a cashless event. Just load these wristbands up, which you already said didn't go to anything. It literally went into a bank account that Billy used to pay back Ezra Birnbaum for the loan. That's where the money went.
Yeah.
It didn't go on wristbands. So everybody shows up in the Bahamas on these plane tickets that they already have and have secured with no money and no way to get off the island, no way to buy food, even if they wanted it. I mean, that's incredibly dangerous to just tell people, oh yeah, you're not going to need any money. It's all in your wristband that you know doesn't exist.
And there's no transportation. Like, you know, a lot of these local Bahamians, like they were honestly doing it out of the kindness of their heart because they didn't want to see people hurt.
Right.
When they found out they weren't getting paid, they left. Everyone left. They're like, I'm not sticking around here. And a lot of people came from other islands because, again, they thought it was going to be a big payday. And it was, you know, and so there wasn't any resources. There wasn't transportation. You didn't have cell service. There wasn't anything that you could use for charging. So that night, everyone was really like, you have to fend for yourself. And so when all that was happening, like the second I saw a mattress on fire, I had like this golf cart that we were like going back and forth so I could check on everybody, bring people water, bring people towels, like whatever we had. Second I saw a mattress on fire, I was like, all my staff was like, get in right now. I was like, we're done. It's over. No more. And so like I started collecting everybody and I counted everybody and I made sure everyone got on the dinghy. And then one girl was like, well, I'll just stay and hang out with these guys. I know them from Miami. I was like, get in the fucking golf cart. I was like, get on that cruise ship. Stay on there. You are safe. Until I say we have a plane ticket out. Do not leave. So at this time, like all hell's breaking loose. And I was like, we can't stay here. This is a liability. Someone's going to get seriously hurt and it won't be our people. And so they're there. And eventually when people found out like there was no way to leave that night, when they were trying to get like bookings and things like that, I finally found a ride back to the villa. I was really scared. I called my brother's in the military. I called him. I was like, what could we possibly do? Another girl, her brother was in the Navy. She called him, said like, is there any way we can get like Coast Guard here or something like that to like bring our people home? I called the captain of the cruise ship and I was like, what are our options? And they were so kind. And they're like, listen, we heard what's going on. We have enough food to get everybody back to Miami. We leave in Miami in a couple of days. We have to stay here for a certain amount of time. He's like, if we need to, we will take everybody back on this cruise ship back to Miami. It's going to take about 2 weeks or whatever, like whatever ship, like time they had to take because they weren't due in 2 weeks.
Right.
And then just go to port. So they're like, hey, we can like, you know, chill for a while, but we have enough food for everybody. And they were about to, like, that was one of our last options if we couldn't get plane tickets back.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But I couldn't get on the cruise ship. They weren't allowing anybody else on. We had to make sure everything was fine there. Like that was that night. So we're trying to like figure everything else out.
Wow.
Yeah. So the cruise, like the next morning.
Yeah. So the next morning, there's a lot of people that decide to leave. And a lot of them are on the plane and they get this email saying, hey, sorry that day one didn't go as planned, but day two's surely going to be better if you want to stick around. Tell me what happened from that moment.
Yeah. So at that point, I told everybody, I was like, we're not working anymore. We're not doing this. As long as you keep your passport on the cruise ship, I was like, you can have a free day. So everyone actually like enjoyed some of the activities that they had. There was like, you know, the cute swing where you see a lot of people's stuff. Some of the people were like, hey, let's make the best of it. And they did for a while. And there was like this makeshift bar that was like kind of set up. And I think they were doing cash bar, but no one had cash. And so they weren't really like able to sell anything because the RFIDs weren't working.
Oh my God.
So whoever did bring cash was allowed to have whatever. And so people were, you know, trying to have a good time. And when it became apparent that they really couldn't stay there another night, they're like, let's get out of here. And so they were trying to organize like flights back. And that's when everyone just went to the airport and were just like waiting for seats. Because it wasn't a regular airline, right? And it was a tiny little airport. And so they're waiting for these chartered flights. So a lot of people did get out. And our staff, they're like, well, we have to get the influencers out first. And we have to get the guests out first. And so that second day, I was like, okay, you know, fine. Do what you need to do. At least my people have a cruise ship, right?
Right.
So then this is where it gets really bad. I watched the documentaries a while ago, but I don't know if they said this, but at some point guests are upset and they're probably harassing some of the locals, you know, things like people are begging for accommodation in the resorts and they're just like sick of it. They're like, you people need to get out of here. And so the Royal Bohemian Guard shows up with rifles and everything. And then, you know, that's their the military. And they go to the house and they're like, basically, who's responsible? You're coming with us now. Billy goes out the back door with the other investors, and apparently they already had a chartered flight. They paid some guy X amount of dollars, and they got the F out of there.
Oh my God.
And then Andy, slimy, disgusting person, he was like, what do we do? What do we do? And so we all went back, and all the other managers, they're like, we're done. Everyone just started packing up their stuff and they're like, we're out. We don't know anything. The people who, you know, owe you money just left. Get somebody from your airspace or something, you know, they're on a flight. So they're trying to find somebody responsible at this point. I guess somebody tells them where Andy's staying, just so happens to be the same place I'm staying. We get in the truck. There's so many people in this tiny little truck. All of the wheels get flat.
Oh no.
We're all stranded on the side of the road. There's like six of us. And this poor woman, she pulls over and she had like her kid in the car. And she's like, hey, if you guys can fit, I'll give you a ride up. And just a tiny little, you know, beater car. And she's like, they're going to kill you. They're going to come here. They're going to arrest you. Or locals are going to kill you. You know what problems that you people caused on this island? She's like, you're lucky. She's like, I just don't want to see anybody get hurt. She's like, good luck. And she was so kind. She like brought us up because we were far away. And so I guess somebody found out where we were. I can't imagine, it was hard. And the guard shows up and they're like, hey, where's the people responsible? And Andy was like, hide me, hide me. And he ended up finding like a chartered flight somewhere and he left. And so it's just us. They didn't care. They didn't say anything to us. I did not answer one email, one text message, one call after that day at all.
Oh my God.
Some of the locals came. I'm not kidding. It was like torches. I mean, because it was so dark out. Torches and like basically pitchforks. And they're trying to find the people responsible. And we're trying to explain to them like, hey, we got screwed over too.
Yeah, we're victims too.
But because we were the Blink 182 house, still had like the alcohol, the things that are just going to be in this villa. So here you go.
Yeah. So you guys are at the Blink 182 house. Blink 182 didn't show up. I think they were one of the first acts to pull out. And these people show up. They're like, who's responsible? Oh, you have snacks.
Yeah. Oh, well, we offered. We're like, hey, we're not doing anything with this. You want some stuff?
Like, we didn't do this, but here are some offerings of peace. Like,
and they were really nice. And like, you know, it was actually quite beautiful, like the villa, and like, you know, they had a cool backyard and everything. And it was weird and it was awkward. Like at some point I just like locked myself in a room and I was like, I got to deal with this shit in the morning.
So when the law comes down, Billy, Andy, and the rest of the fire execs escape, just strand you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Great Exuma, just stranded.
Yeah. Everybody. And it was even their team too. They stranded everybody.
We have some of the staff on the cruise. Is that how they were able to get back?
No. So they stayed on there. We ended up securing the flights, but not until another day later. We had to wait till everybody kind of got off first. And I wouldn't let them get off the cruise ship until we had flights that were booked. I was like, do not. I was like, just in case, God forbid, something happens. I was like, and you're on this property. I can't keep you safe. I can keep you safe over there. Like, I'm talking to the captain. Everything's cool.
Right.
I was like, but if you get off, I can't protect you. Everyone understood, but I had to at some point explain to them the severity of what happened or what was going to happen, because some people were just like, ah, this is weird. You know, am I still getting paid?
Right.
That's a whole nother story. We go to the airport and it was just like a waiting game, just a huge waiting game. We were all in lines and just hoping for our turn. And they actually held back the production team and they wanted to keep the production equipment as collateral to get paid because they still owed the Bahamas like $1 million or $1.2 million. And they were trying to keep the production equipment because it was expensive, right? It was valuable.
Right.
So they wouldn't let them board the flights.
Oh my God.
And they kept them there. Yeah. I think they like ended up, had to call the embassy or something. And like a bunch of stuff was like in customs for a really long time. So like they had to keep their stuff there until, you know, the Bahamas got paid. And then eventually it was like released. I don't know. You'd have to talk to those guys. But that was kind of what happened. I was like right behind them. And they're like, nah, we're keeping this.
Wow.
Eh.
So you get back to New York.
No, we were stuck in Miami for 2 weeks. We couldn't get a flight back.
You were stuck in Miami for 2 whole weeks.
Yeah. Oh. Couldn't get home. Everyone was trying to fly out.
But while you're in Miami, Billy's arrested in New York. He's arrested a few days after the festival. How did you guys feel when you heard that news?
I mean, just not surprised at all. Like zero surprises. We're just like, yeah, great. Good. Someone's doing their job. Because a bunch of guests were lawyers, or they called their lawyers and they're like, someone needs to come arrest this guy because what he did on the island was criminal. That's the only reason why. If no one like complained like that, or someone didn't have access to a legal counsel, that would have never happened.
No. It was so quick too. I mean, it really was like within days of him getting back.
Someone's dad made a phone call.
One of those awkward, friendless trust fund babies called his dad.
Yeah.
And fixed everything. So Billy goes to jail, gets out on bail. He's waiting his whole thing. And he does another ticket scam, a VIP access.
Yeah.
Gets a couple more sentences tacked onto him. And part of his sentence was that he had to pay back $26 million in restitution to all of the investors and all of these people that he has scammed. So I know that the company you worked for went under, you said, because of COVID. But until that point, were they a part of that $26 million restitution?
No. So the restitution was really for the guests. The vendors, even though we tried, were never a part of that lawsuit, except for like maybe, you know, someone who filed it independently. The reason why we couldn't file like even a lawsuit against Billy is because we didn't have a contract with Billy. We had a contract with Fyre Festival LLC,
right,
and that went bankrupt. So we'll never see that money. And we were owed over
$350,000. $350,000. Wow.
And we had to pay everybody who went down there. We had to pay them for their 2 weeks. So the agency never got paid. I, of course, never got paid. But we had to pay everybody else. And the company almost went under during that time.
Yeah, I was going to say, because not only did they lose the promise of the revenue that Billy said would come through, but everybody that was there had to be paid. So you lost money just for being there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That is incredible. That kind of brings it back full circle to Billy now.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think a lot of people, when I say like, oh, he's trying to do Fyre Fest again, people are like, oh yeah, I saw that documentary. And you know, there were two. One, I thought I like Fyre Fraud a little bit better, not just because I have a connection to it, but because I just thought it was done a lot better. And I think, you know, the other one, there's a lot of scammers that were a part of making that to make themselves not look quite as scammy.
100%.
So,
and that's
so right.
Hey, look at what happened to like this marketing agency. And they were like, let's watch this train wreck. And they did, they turned the story of they were supposed to be following him into, hey, look what an idiot this guy is. So
right.
No matter what, it was a win-win for them. They're always going to win. And they're always going to make a documentary. What was the subject matter though? So that's always what that was going
to
be.
So we see Billy get out of prison. He got out early. He was sentenced to 6 years. And to pay $26 million in restitution, which he still owes all $26 million, even though he's been out of prison for a year and a half. He claims it's almost been a year, but he got out of the halfway house in August of 2022. But he got out of prison in March of 2022. He has a 3-year supervised probation. They're watching him, which is why I think that he said Fyre Fest 2 is going to be in December of 2024. That allows him 4 months to reschedule. And then 4 months past that puts him right out of his probation date.
Yeah.
So April of 2025, and he is no longer on probation. And I really honestly think if Fyre Festival happens, it's going to happen then or past that because of those stipulations.
You don't think it's still going to be the date of like the December 2024?
No, because I don't think he can have an event while he's still on probation, even though he's not. See, that's the other thing.
That's the other thing that they say. He's like, oh, the organizers won't let me have anything to do with it. So he's just the,
right.
He's the mouthpiece.
Right. He's the face. He's the mouthpiece. He's that, right? But I still think if he's promote, because I think also
And I don't know, maybe I need a lawyer to like really give me the yeses and the noes of everything. But people in my comment section have said things like, you're not allowed to profit off your crime, which was one of the reasons that he got thrown into solitary, was he was making a for-profit podcast from prison using the prison phone. And so they threw him in solitary because that was the only way to keep him off the phone. And he did two different stints of solitary confinement in a 6-year sentence, of which he only served 3.5. So, I mean, come on, right? Like, it's just, it's wild to me. And the thing is, like, he's doing everything exactly the same. Like, the fire tickets started at $500. Firefest 2 tickets started at $499. He's creating the FOMO effect of each level goes up and costs more. Each experience is just a little bit more. It costs a little bit more. Same thing with Fire 1. He's doing the same exact thing with Fire 2. It is literally play by play, the exact same thing. And there are still people that are like, you got this, Billy. Everybody deserves a second chance. And I'm like, this is like his 40th chance.
Yeah. It's how many chances is this guy going to get? Like,
yes. How many chances does this guy get? I don't know what to expect. I mean, I have so many theories. People have also said to me, if you are a convicted felon, you're not allowed to have a passport. You're not allowed to leave the country freely like that. You mentioned passports and being on a boat. I know from going on cruises that if you leave and return from the same U.S. port, you only need an ID. You don't need a passport to leave. Billy has also said that this event is happening in the Caribbean Sea. No island has been named yet. We also know the Bahamas, they don't want him. They consider him a fugitive.
Yeah.
They don't want him back either. So that eliminates the eastern part of the Caribbean Sea for him. So if he's claiming it's in the Caribbean Sea, it could be on a boat.
Yeah, on a cruise. And international waters, I mean, they have no jurisdiction, so no one can come and get him.
Right. The other thing that was another theory of mine is that all of the ticket sales he claims are being held in escrow. He just called it escrow. He didn't prove that there was any sort of escrow. He just called it. We know from the RFID tags and from other scammers in the world, like Bernie Madoff, that a lot of times these escrow funds or these like holding funds are really just bank accounts. I don't know if there's any interest on these bank accounts where he could be making additional money on top of that. But the stipulation on this escrow is he cannot touch the money, or whoever's in charge of touching the money cannot touch the money until a final date is announced. So that also goes back to maybe April 2025. We announce it, I get the money, and I bounce gone into international waters. I mean, I could just be very paranoid and I could just maybe look into scams and things a lot more than other people. But I mean, it's not out of the realm. Like, he's literally done almost this exact same thing before.
That's a really good point. I didn't even think about it like that. But if he's bold enough to really pull off his like final scheme, like in Ocean's 11 or something, like, you know, who does he think he is? But yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't put it past him or anybody that works with him.
Right? Like, I hope I'm wrong, but I also now have proof when it happens of me being like, I said this. Like, I said this in August of 2023. I'm just very curious how everything will play out. I'm also very curious why people continue to support this man, knowing all of the things he's done, how easy it is to just Google and do your due diligence and see all of this. But people buy into this. One of the questions that I get so much, and it's totally rhetorical because it gets asked all the time, is who would ever work with this guy? And as someone who worked with this guy, do you have any insight into the answer of that question?
In our instance, right, it's like this, you're selling this pipe dream of, you know, everyone is going to make it big if you're involved in this grand thing. Everyone wants that opportunity. And at that time, when still social media, I feel like it was pretty new and really being utilized in that way to promote those types of things. And so it just seemed like this big, huge, like global, larger than life type of thing. You're selling this kind of pipe dream.
Yeah, people want to be a part of it.
For anybody who wants to work with him now, it's like, I want to be a part of the conversation that's happening, whether it's positive or negative. And I don't care as long as I'm a part of it. Or, you know, there's no bad publicity, right?
Right.
And maybe they have other aspirations or maybe they have other goals. And that's really what it has to be about.
Yeah.
And even the, you know, the working with them, like the Broadway musical, it's going to make some kind of money. Right. People are going to want to see it.
I thought the same thing too. I was like, I don't know. I'm like, where's the ticket sales going to go? Is it going to be to restitution? Like, I love Broadway musicals. If it's going to be good, if it's going to be tongue in cheek, if it's going to be like Book of Mormon style Firefest, I'm there. But if it's some like romanticizing the scam, I'm not into it. It'd be really very strange for somebody to romanticize the scam and not make it very funny and poking fun at Billy. And I'm thinking that maybe Billy just isn't picking up on that because of other personality things, that he's like, they want to make a Broadway musical about me and my life. And I'm like, that's not what it's going to be about, buddy. Like,
well, wasn't it even that documentary too, that was supposed to be the one that he and the other producer made? Cause he did make the other one. I forget which one it was.
Oh, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. There is a lot of hubris. I think there's a lot of, I'm not a mental health care professional, so I can't diagnose anybody, but there's a lot of narcissistic personality disorder things going on, I think, with the hubris and how big and charming and charismatic and magical that he makes everything out to be. And every single time he's tried to do anything, it's been a scam. Like, it's never been what he says it's going to be. And that's why, for me, I'm like, why is Fire 2 going to be any different?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it can't be anything else, because that's all he knows. That's not like a normal way of thinking. And, you know, the lack of empathy, I mean, it's astounding. Like, nobody else, it's like sociopathic behavior. Like, and he puts a smile on it. And he has access too, right? So whether that's to money or to people or celebrity status or to whatever it is that you're trying to achieve, if you're somebody with those similar ambitions, you're going to be attracted to that person and you're going to want to be involved with that person because you think that they're going to get you ahead.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of who worked with him and why they worked with him, because he goes, look at all these things I can get for you.
Right.
Look at all these things I can do for you. And that's the running theme, and that always will be. And that's his value add is, well, look what I have and look who I'm attached to. That's the value add. And that's why people are still interested with him.
Yeah.
Always.
So had the company been paid, how are they supposed to be paid? Like through a wire or?
It's usually like ACH or a credit card, right? And, you know, wire, sure, whatever. Yeah.
There was never any like promise of like, aside from these wire lies that they told a lot of people, there wasn't any promise of like, this is how we're going to pay you when we pay you.
No, it's a very standard contract. And these are the payment terms.
And without a contract, like you said, there are no payment terms. Yeah. God.
Yeah. And if, you know, if that company goes bankrupt, like who's liable?
Right.
And I think everyone initially went after the investors, of course, because they have everything in their shell companies or whatever that they're investing through. Then those went bankrupt or those became, you know, whatever. So, you know, they're not liable or responsible. And everyone does that purposefully, right? So they don't ever have to pay down.
Right.
Yeah, because Billy's name wasn't on anything. We can't actually recruit funds like that or weren't ever able to.
Wow. Well, I just want to say thank you so much, Gina, for coming on and sharing your experience. I have a couple of questions that I do at the very end. I've tailored them for Fire. Are you ready? Give me one word that encompasses how you feel about Fire Festival.
One word only. Trash heap.
Give me a warning to somebody who is looking on the Fire Fest 2 ticket website and thinking about going to the second round of this shit show.
Don't! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
Give me one of the worst memories of your time working with Billy and Fire.
I mean, there's the whole experience, really. But one magical one in particular is just being caught there and expected to be the management on site and them taking zero responsibility and us being the ones that... We're like, we'll go talk to them. They're the ones that are managing this now. And we're like, what? Like, it was that transfer of responsibility when, you know, we were innocents too. And that was my heart sank. I wanted to throw up. Like that, it was in that one instance where I was like, this is bad news. This is bad people. And we got to do this for ourselves now. That was just, it was disgusting. Like the way that went down. And it was just a split. It was just a couple words.
Yeah.
It's like, you do it now.
Yeah.
They're responsible.
Jeez.
Gross.
What was the hardest lesson that you learned working for Fire?
hardest and also probably best lesson is get that money up front, girl. Like, you can't. You get a signed contract and you get all the money before you go down there. You know, and I think it's kind of getting all of the roles, responsibilities, like outline in front, expectations from both sides, right?
Right.
You know, what are the deliverables from the agency? What are we supposed to deliver to you? And what are your expectations of us? And really map that out. And I can tell you right now, the contracts that I compose and get signed are very comprehensive.
And let's finish it on a positive. Give me a positive takeaway from your time working with FIRE.
I think all the relationships that we had in that shared trauma, like, we have lifelong friendships now from everybody there. And that's just really been the highlight of my life. Like, we always have something to joke about. We always have a conversation starter. I can't tell you how many times, like, my friend that lives close to me, you know, she'll just randomly bring it up. Hey, remember that one time we were at FIRE and, like, people just want to talk to us? Like, I'm like, don't do it. She's like, well, let me tell you the real story.
Wow.
That's what it is. We'll be shared friends in trauma forever.
So I guess the B of this question is, what do your friends think about what he's doing now?
Everyone's on the same page. Everyone's just absolutely disgusted. They all want to talk to you. So just let me know.
Hey, yeah.
Pass along.
I would love to continue to tell the true story of FIRE, because Billy McFarland, you're not going to get away with it again.
Absolutely not.
That's all I got to say.
We can't let it happen. So we're, you know, as long as we spread the word and make sure that people really understand, if you're working with him, what you're getting yourself into. And, you know, even if you're managing it, like, you, he's tainted, like, you don't want to associate with him at all. He needs to go away, like, completely.
Yeah. Agreed. Thank you so much, Gina.
Yeah. You know, I hope we can talk again soon, and good luck with everything. And hopefully we can, you know, work together to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast, or visit our new website at lifeaftermlmpod.com. You can find all of the links to follow in our show notes. Life After MLM is produced by Roberta Blevins. Audio editing is done by the lovely Kayla Craven. Video editing by the indescribable RK Gold. And Michelle Carpenter is our triple emerald princess of robots. If you have a story about a cult, fraud, scam, or MLM and want to be on the show, please hit us up. We would love to help you tell your story and start your healing journey in Life After MLM. See you next time, Huns.